Horse of a Different Color by Ralph Moody, University of Nebraska Press, 1968. We're on Chapter 3, A Different Lesson for Bob. Lord, it was good to have today as a day of rest, a Sabbath, that allowed us to be still and to worship. Thank you, God, that you give us one day every week to cease from work, from ordinary work. And so keep teaching myself and all the family how to work hard for 6 days, to delight in that hard work, and then to rest on the seventh. In Jesus' name, amen. Wow, it's funny that I'd even pray about that, because the first sentence here says, except on Sundays, a freight train, its caboose serving as passenger, mail, and express car, left the main line at Orleans, Kansas, whenever the night mail train pulled in from St. Joseph, made a run to St. Francis, Kansas, and returned to Orleans about midnight. Arrival time at way stations depended upon the number of cars left or picked up on the run, but the westbound train usually reached Cedar Bluffs in late forenoon and came back at supper time. Saturday was livestock shipping day, and the branch train never failed to make connections at the main line with the weekender stock trains for Omaha and Kansas City. On my return from Kansas City, there were a few cars to be shunted on the sidings, so we pulled into Cedar Bluffs before 10 o'clock. And I went directly to the bank, gave Bones the sales ticket, and told him I was sorry to have done no better, but that there had been little demand for poor grade cattle and hogs. There's never a demand for them, he told me, so there's nothing to be sorry about. Getting that kind of stock out of the herds in this township was worth every dollar it cost me. Then he looked at me sharply and said, I didn't expect you back so early. I'm glad you came here. I've just phoned for Bob Wilson to come up right away. According to what I've been hearing these last few days, he's no more fit to run a business than a five-year-old. Stock running loose and scattering feed all over the place while he's sharpening up his eye at the scales so he can skin these farmers by outguessing them on cattle weights. Is that right? I tried to duck the question, but he looked me squarely in the eyes and demanded, is that right? I wouldn't go that far, I said. He spent considerable time at the scales when I've been around, and the feed is badly scattered, but he knows livestock fattening thoroughly. It's my guess he's always worked under an owner who ran the business and that he hasn't learned to be his own boss. Humph, Bones snorted. I've got no time to watch over him, and it sounds like the longer I let him keep that stock, the more money he'll lose for me. And I was doubtful of him from the start, so never let him have anything but call loans. He ought to be here any minute now, and I want you to stay. Bob had evidently scented trouble, for he was barely inside the bank when he began bragging about the weight he was putting on his stock. Bones let him go for a couple minutes, then broke in. I'll take your word for that, but I can't afford any more of the slipshod way you're letting things go around there. Loose stock running all over the place and scattering feed from Dan to Beersheba, while you waste your time, helps time, and your own at the scales. I want you to order cars and ship every head of that stock to market next Saturday. Now, wait a minute, Bob shouted. It's no fault of mine that some of that stock's so puny. I have to leave it run loose. Don't forget that you shoved half of it onto me without no chance to say if I wanted it or not, or even to dicker over the price. Some of them cattle ain't been on the corn 30 days yet, and it takes longer and it takes that long just to get their insides fat. If I was to ship now, they wouldn't bring no more than pasture cattle, and I'd lose all the feed and labor I put into them. Bones was often hot-tempered, but he waited quietly for Bob to finish, then told him, part of what you say is true, and I want to be fair with you. If you'll ship that stock Saturday and sign over what's left of the feed, I'll cancel the balance of your notes. That way you can't lose anything. You've had a year's living for your family, and you'll be left with 3 good horses, harness, a wagon or two, and a couple of milch cows. Considering the amount of feed Bob had let go to ruin and that hog prices had dropped 40% since he'd bought, the offer was more than fair, but he refused it. Right at the beginning, I told you them steers wouldn't be ready to ship till January, he blustered, and you said that would be okay. The way I'm putting weight onto them now and the way the fat cattle market's going up, by January I'd have leastways a $10,000 profit, and I don't aim to settle for a dime less. That was too much for Bones. There's no sense in wasting time with a man who won't talk reason, he shouted. I'll get a court foreclosure and let the sheriff do the talking. Then he turned to me and said, order cars enough to ship that stock Saturday, and I'll pay you at the same rate as before. Whether or not it was a bluff, it got results. I didn't aim to be unreasonable, Bob said meekly. And there's no need of you getting a court order. If you leave it up to George Minor, whatever he says will be all right with me. We found George mending a corral fence, and after listening to the arguments on both sides, he said, The way I see it, neither one of you comes up with clean hands. Bob, your claim that you had stock and feed shoved onto you that you didn't want don't hold water. It wouldn't have been shoved onto you if you hadn't been willing to sign notes for it. A lender has the right to call in his loan, irregardless of due date. If the borrower is heedless or wasteful of or mismanages his business, and I'd say you've been guilty of all three. Then he told Bones, Harry, I'd say you've been negligent if you've just found out what's been going on over to Bob's place. If you'd called his loans 2 weeks ago, nobody could have blamed you for it. But now that you've had a tip-off about the bank examiners coming this way, it's unreasonable to foreclose or make him ship half fat stock. Like he says, the last steers put into that lot won't bring better than range cattle prices if they're shipped now, and the feed put into them will be a dead loss. But he knows better than to believe he'd make anywhere as near $10,000 if he was left to feed him till January. This is what I suggest to the both of you. Unless I miss my guess, the hog market's due for an upturn. The only way to get any good out of that trample corn is to feed it to hogs. I say it would be best for all hands if that feedlot fence was tightened up and the hogs held long enough to turn that beat-up corn into pork. Them steers was too poor a grade to put into a feedlot in the first place, and the sooner they're shipped, the better. Seems to me, Harry, like Bob ought to get the same break you had me give folks on the rest of the culls. He'd make a good, fair profit selling them at $12 a hundred, that is, if he took reasonable care of his feed and done his own work instead of hiring a couple of men he didn't need. It'll cost around $10 a head to ship them steers, and I doubt they'll bring $12 a hundred at Kansas City. But I'd say you ought to take him off his hands at that price, weighed out of his lot on shipping day. For all Bob's bluster about $10,000 profit, he agreed readily. Bones seemed less eager, but said he'd take the cattle on Saturday if George would act as waymaster and I'd handle the shipping. I was glad to agree, but George said, I'd be willing to do the weighing, Harry, but I promised Irene to take her to Oberlin Saturday forenoon for her shopping. Then he turned to me and asked, Do you reckon you'd have time enough to sort and load if we didn't start weighing before 1 o'clock? 1 o'clock will be just fine, Bob cut in. Me and my men will give him all the help he needs, so there won't be no worry about getting him loaded by train time. I left Kitten at the Wilson place when I went to Kansas City, so stopped by to get her on my way back from George Miner's. As I saddled, I told Bob it seemed to me he'd have done better to take Bones' original offer. But he laughed at the idea. Shucks, he told me. That would have put me out of business. But this way, I'll make leastways $3,000 or $4,000. Them steers in the lot cost me less than $60 a head, and I'll get close on to $100 apiece out of them. Sure, there's some feed scattered around, but that don't amount to nothing. I've got plenty left to fatten 1,000 cattle, and if a man's got the feed, there ain't a banker no place that won't lend him the price of feeder steers and pigs. Soon as ever I get shut of these culls, I aim to put in 1,000 high-grade Herefords, and by spring I'll clean up a fortune on them. I couldn't tell whether Bob believed what he was saying, or it was just more of his big talk. But there was no use in arguing with him. I stopped at the house to thank Marguerite for her kindness, then swung on the Kitten and headed for home. On the way, I stopped at the depot and had the agent, Dad Haynes, order 10 cattle cars for Saturday morning. There had been a dilapidated three-room house, a fairly large barn, and good pole corrals on the half section I'd leased. My weed hauling crew had repaired and painted the house in spare time and made me a snug little home with secondhand furniture. At the end of the hauling season, we'd stored the wagons and harness in the barn and turned all the horses except Kitten out to pasture for the winter. I didn't mind housekeeping, but my diet was a nuisance. The kind of gluten bread that I baked was hard to get down, and the nearest I could come to finding fish and leafy green vegetables was canned salmon and sauerkraut. It was past noon when I got home. So I lighted a fire, put a can of sauerkraut on the heat, and opened a can of salmon. After eating, I rode out to see that the horses were all right, then baked 2 loaves of gluten bread. It was either the worst I ever made, or comparison with Marguerite's made it taste more like sawdust and glue than usual. I opened more sauerkraut and salmon for supper, but when I sat down to the table, I had no appetite. I wasn't actually lonesome, but had never liked to eat alone and hadn't realized how much I'd enjoyed mealtime while staying with the Wilsons. I was too restless to read in the evening, so saddled Kitten and rode until I was tired enough to sleep. I spent all day Friday patching the barn roof and nibbled at meals of warmed over sauerkraut, salmon, and soggy gluten bread. Saturday morning, I drove down to repair some sagging gates at the Cedar Bluff shipping pens, and the first thing I noticed was the bawling of cattle in Bob's feedlot. It grew steadily louder, and by 10 o'clock, I became worried. It was barely a quarter mile to the buildings on the Wilson place, but I'd seen no one stirring there all morning, so drove over to investigate. No one was at home, and the pump lay dismantled at the foot of the windmill tower. At the feedlot, I found all the watering tanks bone dry, and there was fresh salt in the cracks and corners of all the feed bunks. I didn't need to be very bright to see through Bob's scheme. He'd get the pump repaired just in time to have those steers so loaded with water at 1 o'clock that they could hardly waddle onto the scales. As bone shipping agent, I felt that I should let him know what was going on, but I didn't like being a tattletale, so decided to ask George Miner for advice. I found him loading baskets of eggs into the back of his Oakland, and as I pulled to a stop, he called. Bob's pump went out of kilter, didn't it? Oh, he called. It seems to have, I told him. There's no one at home, but it's pulled out of the well and dismantled. George didn't look up, but said, them steers have been hollering the news since sunup. Bob ought to have thought about that. He could have kept them quiet till noontime if he'd waited till after breakfast to salt them, and they'd have took on just as big a load of water by 1 o'clock as they will this way. That's what I came over to talk to you about, I said. I don't like being a squealer, but with Bones paying me to be his shipping agent, don't you think I should? Don't reckon I'd do it, George said slowly. This is the kind of mess where the more you stir it, the more it stinks. If I was in your boots, I believe I'd keep my trap shut, wouldn't let on to Bob nor anybody else that I had any notion what he was up to. Why don't you ride over to Oberlin with us if you ain't got nothing better to do this forenoon? Then he turned toward the house and called, Oh, Irene, you about ready? We'd best to get started pretty soon. Bob must have returned very soon after I left his place. When we passed it on our way to Oberlin, he and his hired men were working on the pump and too busy to notice us. George drove an automobile with as much consideration as he drove a horse, and not much faster. It was noon before we reached Oberlin, and Mrs. Miner spent fully an hour shopping. Then George took us to the best restaurant for dinner, and the service was terribly slow. It was 2 o'clock before we'd finished eating, and almost 3 when we got back to Cedar Bluffs. On our way through town, George left his wife at Grandma Redmond's, and when we drove into the Wilson yard, Bob King came hurrying to meet us, calling out irritably, What's been keeping you? The weighing out was to begin at 1 o'clock, and it's dang near 3 already. Now I'm right sorry about that, George said in an apologetic tone. But anymore, I don't get around as spry as I used to, and sometimes I'm a mite forgetful. Seems like I do recollect asking Bud if commencing at 1 o'clock would allow him enough loading time. And I recall you saying that 1 o'clock would be just fine. But if we agreed on that as a fixed time, I sure forgot about it. Oh, well, I guess it won't make much odds one way or another. I see you got the steers all sorted and penned according to sizes, so we'll have plenty of time anyways. It was a sorting that I was mostly concerned about. Bob was on a spot where he couldn't holler without practically admitting his guilt. I knew he was fuming inside, but he tried to act jovial. That's all right, he said. I and the boys have got everything lined out so you won't have to lose a minute nowheres. Got the scales all balanced up for you, and the boys will put the cattle across the platform as fast as you can set weights on the beam. The condition of the pens left no doubt as to the amount of water Bob had managed to get into those steers, or that it was draining away rapidly. Waterlogged cattle won't eat or drink for several hours, so Bob's only hope for success in this trick was to get his steers weighed as quickly as possible. But George wouldn't hurry. After he spent 5 or 6 minutes lighting the counter, poised back and forth along the scale beam, Bob called out, Anything wrong, George? Wouldn't say so, George answered, just a mite sluggish and bound up. Nothing more than a man might expect if they're rested. Stomping on the corners ought to loosen them up. For fully half an hour, George paid no attention to a few pieces of lumber half buried in hay chaff that lay in the 10-inch space between the beam housing and the fence at the front of the scale platform. Then he sang out, By gosh, Oh, but that's where the boar got into the cabbage patch. Like as not, there's a rotten plank busted down on the beam rod. He bent over and tossed out a 10-foot 2x6 along with a dozen shorter pieces of old lumber. That's it, sure enough, he said, wrenched away a sagging plank and slid the 2x6 back to bridge the hole. His face was expressionless, though I was sure he noticed what I did. The 2x6 had been so placed that by stepping on it, the gate tender could add his own weight to that of each batch of cattle over the scales. In a last desperate effort to get a few hundred pounds of water weight in with his cattle, Bob kept his men at a trot as they drove steers on and off the scales. It was 3:30 when the first 10 were driven on, and 4:20 when the last 10 were driven off. As George weighed each batch he had, Bob and me checked the scales, the figure he entered on the tally sheet, and the addition of the previous total. He wrote his name below the last figure brought down, passed the pencil to Bob, and said, I want both of you to go over my arithmetic and put your name down if you find it I'm right. Then there'll be no room for arguments later on. As Bob leaned over the tally sheet, George looked around at me, and one eyelid drooped for an instant. I had no way of estimating how much water Bob had tried to sell bones at 12 cents a pound, but his steers would have had to weigh an additional 13 tons to bring the $100 a piece that he'd bragged they would. Bob helped with the loading, but didn't go along when George and I took the tally sheets to the bank. Bones made no comment on the weight, but told me to get the cattle auctioned early Monday morning and to wire him immediately the amount he could draft against the commission agent. Cattle usually lost 7 to 10% in weight during shipment from western Kansas, but Bob's steers had dried out so thoroughly before George weighed them that the shipping shrinkage was slight, and on Monday morning, beef cattle at the Kansas City auction sold for the highest prices since the war. The steers I brought in did well enough that Bones lost barely $1,500 on them after paying freight, selling commission, and my fee. I sent him a telegram as soon as the last carload had been sold, but there was no need of my hurrying back to Cedar Bluffs, so I took a room at the Stockman's Hotel. It was headquarters for the biggest cattlemen in the West when they came to Kansas City, and there was never an afternoon or evening when they weren't sitting around the lobby discussing livestock and their market prospects. For the next 3 days, I read every word of livestock news in the papers, listened to every discussion in the hotel lobby, and talked to every agent, drover, feeder, or stockman with whom I could scrape up an acquaintance. When I boarded the train home, I was more enthused about the livestock feeding business than I'd ever been about anything in my life. I am so impressed with how George was able to keep a dishonest man from getting away with his scheme. That was pretty clever. And Ralph is constantly learning. So I love you guys. Have a good day.